All right, man. It's Wednesday night and we're back. It's we're almost on schedule. It's 6:35. And we still don't have an intro, but we have a new fantastic intro song. And it's courtesy of a customer. And I have to tell you this story. I don't know if he wants me to talk about him, so I'm not going to. Let's just leave it as a customer. Okay. But spends a lot of time tooling around with like new technology and stuff like that, right? And I don't know how we were talking about it. I said something and he has an MCP that basically took our Slack conversation and turned it into music. And it made like a whole song, right? So he sent it to me. I'm like, that has to be the intro, the new intro for the podcast. So we lost our sort of dance riff there at the beginning, and now we have a meta MCP song.
That's awesome. I mean, it's a pretty good, pretty catchy little track too.
Oh yeah. I think he sent me maybe like three or four, and all based off of this Slack conversation we were having, and they're all insanely catchy. I probably will be singing them now. I can't help myself. So I think we have to get him on the podcast, and he can just tell us about all the crazy stuff he's working on, because I'm sure he has some fantastic stories.
That's got to be a Suno thing, right?
Oh, yeah. There you go, man. You knew exactly what it was.
I was trying to remember the name of the company. I was like, okay, yeah, music. It's probably Suno.
Yeah, it's Suno. Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's see. Where would we like to start? AWS News. I have a couple things here. One of them, the URL confused the heck out of me, but I think it's new news. But a couple Agent Core related things. And actually, I think it was last week we were kind of like, meh, a little boring week, right? And for AWS News. And this week, there's a bunch of stuff. So there's some new features in Agent Core that allow you to essentially, I'm going to summarize it as build stuff faster on AWS, right? So it's got a managed harness now, which allows you to define a model, all your system prompts, the tools that go along with it, and run that with basically no code, right? I guess you define it and you provide it to Agent Core and it works its magic. It also has file system persistence now, so you're able to stop an agent mid-flight and then it can pick up where it left off, which I thought was pretty cool as well.
Yeah, this was awesome. It's like a whole CLI / integrated workspace situation, right?
Yeah.
I didn't catch whether you could install. I mean, I guess you must be able to install the SDK to your local machine, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I think this, you know, I probably say this every week. Like, here's another thing that has to go on my to-do list, because I kind of had the same reaction as, well, this is really cool. And I don't know exactly how it works, but I did see they mentioned like you can deploy with CDK and then Terraform's coming soon kind of thing. And remember, it was a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Kiro Powers, which are really MCPs with tools and everything mixed right in. It supports that. It supports coding agents. It looks pretty slick. Oh, and it's model agnostic. And they said in the release that you're even able to switch models midstream. So pretty cool.
So they're kind of developing their own, this is kind of their version of a harness / ecosystem / managed agent thing all bundled into one space, I guess, which is really neat. Yeah. Cause like you can pick whatever model you want. It provides the harness. So that's the agent loop to go and do the task. And then you provide the system prompt and you can do it all from your CLI. So that's cool. I'm gonna mess around with this.
Pretty cool. Right. Yeah. I can't think of a use case for it right away. You probably know I'm thinking Kanban board, but it's always my go-to to poke around on these things, but I haven't been able to wrap my head around it quite yet. So that was the first Agent Core announcement. This one here confused me a little bit because I'm mostly sure that it's this week, but then I noticed today when I was building my cheat sheet, the URL said 2024. I think it's just a typo in the URL because then it says posted date of like April, whatever we are, 2026. But this is the Agent Core Gateway functionality, as well as identity, have the ability now to support VPC egress configurations. Okay. So I guess this would be probably something very important for enterprise, right? Where you want to make sure that you're able to basically make API calls and stuff like that privately, staying on the AWS network, that kind of stuff. The example they gave in the release was being able to invoke like maybe containers running on an EKS solution or something like that, where your MCP servers are sitting. So, and not exposing anything to the internet. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So this is for your internal, your organization tools that you want to host and deploy.
Yeah.
And you don't have to make public internet calls. That's perfect.
Yeah. The hair did stand up on the back of my neck as I was reading it, though, because they mentioned Lattice. And I was like, oh, God. Mm. Right? So they have like...
avoid it.
Yeah, they have two models or two modes that they're talking about. So just sort of a standard egress for typical use, and then if you have more complex requirements, it can be integrated to Lattice, which
Lattice is not a service I think I've ever touched in production.
I have.
Oh no.
Yeah.
How was it?
Traumatizing would be, if I had to describe it in one word, frustrating if I wanted to describe it in two words.
Agonizing.
Yeah, that's another good adjective. We got it working, but I can tell you it wasn't enjoyable. And I'm being asked to make a change to it, and I was like, oh, crap. Really? Okay, yes, but it's not instilling lots of fun feelings inside of me that I'm like, oh, great. So anyways, it's there, right? Pretty cool. Supports a bunch of regions. I think really this is clearly targeted at enterprise, where they have strict controls over or strict requirements on where that traffic can go, right?
Totally. I mean, it feels like they're enabling SageMaker for agentic workloads and coding and harnesses and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, same kind of deal.
Yep. Every week it seems like, well, I guess I shouldn't say every week, because last week was kind of boring or slow, right? But it just seems like they're doing AWS here, where just tool after tool after tool that you can then decide how you want to assemble.
And yeah, instead here's the primitives.
Instead of infrastructure, now we're talking about how do you build Gen AI applications on AWS. Here are all the tools to assemble in the ways that make sense for you.
Mm. Right. It's crazy how fast this is coming out too, right? Like,
the
timeline for agentic things is like, I don't know, I saw someone mention a comparison of it's like dog ears. It's like 7 to 1 speed ratio.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe that's because agents are writing all of the features. So they're able to turn them around really fast. I don't know. But yeah, I don't disagree with you. And speaking of fast changes, did you see Amazon Quick? Let me be careful how I say this. Again, this is the one thing, because like in true Amazon fashion, could they make it any more confusing, right? There's Amazon Quick Site, which becomes Quick Suite. I think it became Quick Suite, which became Amazon Quick. And now there's Amazon Quick Dashboard or Desktop or something.
So this is like their chat to dashboard situation, right? Yeah. Is that the idea?
Yeah. Okay. My immediate, I've installed it already. Like as soon as I saw it, I'm really kind of ticked off at myself, because I made a note that I guess it was, what's today, Wednesday? So it must have been yesterday. They had like an, for lack of a better, I don't know what it was called. I'm just going to call it the AWS AI Day or something. It was like an online thing you could register for, and I just totally forgot. And there was a lot of interesting announcements that came out of that. Maybe that's why we're seeing a bunch of stuff this week, right?
Oh, probably.
This was one of them. So I was like, I'm going to download that thing. So I downloaded it, and two hot takes on it. It's everybody building their own version of OpenClaw, or whatever we call it now. Okay. It kind of feels like that, right? And this is Amazon's version of it. It's a desktop client. I think it only supports Mac at this point. It's got all sorts of connectors. Like I connected it to my calendar. I connected it to my email. I connected it to Google Drive. Didn't allow it to send anything or whatever, but it can at least see those like resources now. Yeah. It had a lot of different connectors that were available. And I could basically go and ask it to look at stuff and find information about, you know, customer A or customer B or somebody in my inbox. So that was pretty cool. The one thing that I stumbled across, and if you asked me to show you where it was now, I wouldn't be able to tell you, but I thought it was pretty cool. Mm. It had like, I'm going to call it a knowledge graph. So I was able to go in and I was looking at, I might've clicked on an entry in my calendar. So it had, it had ingested my calendar and I said something like, hey, show me what's in my calendar tomorrow. So it spits up just a recreation of my calendar page, right? Like my daily page. Okay. And I clicked on it and it showed me all the people that were in the meeting. And it had figured out relationships with those people, like which organizations they came from, all that kind of stuff. And I was able to kind of edit the graph a little bit.
Interesting. Yeah. So there's like a GraphDB on the back end there
relationship. Yeah. Like some visualization tool that allows you to look at it. I didn't see it anywhere else, but I also didn't poke around a whole lot. But I thought it was pretty good. I think it's basically yet another version of OpenClaw, right?
It's the Claude app. It's the Jet. The Codex app, it's OpenClaw over again.
Yeah, that was actually the other thing that I thought of. I'm like, this is the Codex app on my desktop. Same idea.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing that, exactly. It does have MCP support. So I wired it into my Docker toolkit. So it picks up all my tools, right? So I was able to talk to OpenBrain from it right away, which was pretty slick. It can also, what was the other thing? It can also, it's got like, I don't want to call it a rag because I don't know if it's really a rag, but you can basically provide it with additional knowledge, like different knowledge sources and stuff like that. And over time, then it can use that to build, I guess, a better understanding of what it is that you're asking it about, right? So I guess it's kind of a rag. I guess it's a knowledge graph. Probably. I don't know what you would call it, right?
It's probably both, honestly. I mean, if that's what they're doing, like, they're probably, like, well, I guess you could point it to various documents or folders that you wanted to consume and know about.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the graph table or GraphDB makes total sense as a way to model your life for an assistant, I guess.
Yeah.
what are my relationships that I care about, right?
Or
projects I care about.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool. They did say that it doesn't train on your customer data.
Okay.
That's good, but you can also do it for free. So that means if you're doing it for free, I didn't look, but you know what they say about free products, right? So
you are the product.
You are the product. So I set it up very quickly because I just wanted to see what it was. And I tied it to my Skill Builder account. Just to wire it up fast because I tried to integrate it with SSO and I don't know, it was giving me a weird screen and I'm like, I don't know what the hell this is asking me and I just want to see it. So I got to go back to the drawing board on that one. I'm sure it's just user error because I literally had come home from a meetup and I was like, next. I just wanted to make it work, right? So I wasn't paying probably as much attention as I should have. So there's a free version. There's a personal version. There's a pro version. There's a enterprise version. There's all sorts of different ways you can slice this thing up. And I think it starts at, $0 a month, but then it jumps up to like $20 for the personal.
So just like Kiro or Q or whatnot.
Yeah. $20 seems to be the price point that most people at least give it a try, right? I guess the other thing that I was thinking of this, it's just like the new IDE. You've got this, you've got Codex app, you've got Insert Next Tool, and what I envision happening is you will just find the desktop app that you prefer, and then at some point you will put so much time and effort into it that your ability, even if you wanted to change, your ability to change and not affect how you work every day will be so horrible that even if you're having a crappy day with it, you're not going to change because the effort to change it will be astronomically high.
Yeah, the switching costs will get crazy and you won't want to make that change. That makes sense.
Yeah.
There's so many of these tools coming out now though. It's crazy. Yep. I think Codex has their own, they're a new agentic first or not codex, but cursor as a new agentic first IDE you can use.
Okay.
There's like T3 code, there's the Pi agent, there's all of the other open source ones, and then yeah, there's all the big labs have their GUI that you can use now. So
yeah.
And now Amazon. So
now Amazon, keeping up with the Joneses, right? Not saying I could have sworn I changed my calendar. I should have asked Amazon quick to change my calendar. Hold on a second.
Mm. Alexa, stop.
That's always a good 30-minute reminder for me. I know I'm already 30 minutes in, right? The other thing that I did think was pretty cool in this is I can kind of understand why they're calling it quick, because you can click on links which take you to what I would call Quick Suite, and you can see all the connectors and everything. So it actually does dump you into Amazon Quick. So it feels, again, like something we talked about a couple weeks ago, where they've got all these primitives, right, which we already talked about. They've got all these primitives, and now they're just assembling them in a new way to offer an AI-based desktop tool, it feels like to me. I could just be completely wrong, but Quick is there under the hood, right? So,
yeah.
I'm sure there'll be lots of hot takes on the name of it. I do find it a little confusing, but you know, if you're into trying these things, it might be worth a kick at least and see what it's capable of doing.
It does seem brave to call something Quick when you have to wait for tokens to come in off of an API and stream those in and to get the response you want. It has to think for minutes at a time.
But I wonder if this is going to go the same path, at least for my personal use, is going to go the same way that the Codex app on my desktop has. Like every week I say to you, I got to spend more time with it. And then I don't. Right. and then we have the same circular conversation every week that I want to try it, but you just never get to it. Right. So I don't know.
Guess they'll see how well it integrates with your custom MCP tools, right? Like your second brain system, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I did have an interesting, this kind of builds off the new intro song. It's amazing how reliant I am on those MCP servers now. I may have said this last week too, but the Docker desktop tool, it patches like all the time. Like every time. Yeah. And I know there's a patch there because my MCP will just start going crazy. It'll just be like, nope, I can't do that anymore. I'm like, oh, there must be another patch. Mm. So that happened yesterday. I guess yesterday evening after I got home. So I'm like, oh, I just did the same thing I always do. I just clicked patch now. Let the desktop app patch and it comes back. And normally what I do if I'm in Claude or whatever, I just tell Claude to reconnect and continue on my way. So I do that like I've done for weeks and weeks, and Docker's Claude's like, no, we're not connected. And oh, here, good. Yeah, here is a little Achilles heel in my open brain solution. I have all of the context for configuring the Docker toolkit in OpenBrain.
Yeah. But if you can't access OpenBrain, you can't reconfigure your toolkit. No.
I know, right? I was like, okay, I could make an API call. I could do that, but I'm so reliant now on the MCP servers. I was like, I'm like, I should just close my laptop lid and go to bed. Like, what's the point? So I did. It was so funny. I start talking to Claude and I'm like, okay, this is what's happened, right? In the past, this is what we've done. And, you know, how do we fix it? And so it's going, it's doing research and stuff. And it was so funny because I'm used now to the agent, whether it's Claude, Kiro, whatever I'm using at the time, being able just to go to OpenBrain and get what it needs. Like, it's like, hey, I'm going to query OpenBrain to go see if I can find some stuff on Traverse, right? Like, just as an example. And it couldn't do that. So I had to then, now I understand the power of these memory systems that are cross-system, because I spent a lot of time reminding it of what we had already done. And I'm like, no, this is what we did in the past. This is what we did in the past. So lucky my own MCP server was working and I was able to dump it into the chat. In the end, it turned out there was actually a pretty big breaking change in the Docker toolkit. Up until now, when you created your custom tools, you define those in YAML. And as of the last patch, those aren't defined in YAML anymore. There's a SQLite database.
Wow. Okay. That's a
Yeah.
huge change.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. So, yeah, I would. Well, actually, this is the best part. Claude figured it out. I'm like, okay,
Oh, great.
go. I'm like, okay, let's not speculate. Go find the documentation for this version of Docker Toolkit and look at the custom MCP configuration. I can't remember what they called them. I think they called it a custom catalog. And it came back and it's like, oh, this is interesting. How you did it in the past is deprecated. And now it's SQLite. I found a command to import all of your existing tool, all of your existing MCPs. So I was like,
Perfect.
yeah, just do
Okay.
that. Just do that.
Yeah,
Right.
just
And it came back to life. So I
Alex.
was like, whew. I would have been lost today without that MCP server, particularly the
Oh my
OpenBrain.
goodness.
I think I would have been in deep, deep trouble. I would have lost half of my brain.
You need a break glass in case of emergency GitHub repo somewhere.
Well, you
Just
know
push it there.
what? It's really interesting that you said that because after that happened, I use Obsidian a lot, right? And I was like, maybe there are certain things that should exist in two different places, right? It's fine that it's in the OpenBrain, which is running up here. And all joking aside, I could get it with an API call, right? That's fine. I just don't want to do that. So I was like, okay, if this is really critical, it probably also makes sense to have it in my local vault or an MD file in GitLab so that I've got a backup to go get it, just to remind myself on how to rebuild something if it goes sideways on me. So
Yeah, totally. Just a reliability layer there. I mean, if it's that important to your workflow, right, you should probably think about what you can do to productionalize it like that, right? Because if Docker decides to totally bork itself again for no reason, we will be in trouble.
Oh
That's
boy.
crazy.
I was like, I was just sitting on the couch and I'm like, no, human error, right? Like, what have I done? And I'm like, do you have these tools? And it's like, no, I don't have those tools. And I'm like, are you sure you don't have
Tools.
those tools? I'm like, no, I don't
I've
have those
never heard of
tools.
those tools.
Yeah, what are you talking about? So yeah, there we go. The other really interesting Bedrock announcement is that OpenAI models and Codex
Yes.
and managed agents are also now available. I think it's in limited preview mode, so I don't know if like that means everybody can get it or whatever, but it's another example of a partnership that allows you to run OpenAI models on Bedrock.
Yeah, this is so fascinating because it's everyone is so desperate for compute right now that they're flocking to AWS. I'm sure we might I wonder if we'll see something similar for Azure and GCP, like or if they even have the chips available. I
Yeah,
know
I don't
Google
know.
just released their latest training or latest AI tensor chips, right? But yeah, interesting to see.
I don't know. I just think it's really interesting. Well, I don't know. I don't think we should actually be surprised. This goes back to how we started the this episode. It's just like AWS has always been the primitive, the tool provider, right? And this is just another example of, hey, we're gonna, and I think they said this right from the beginning, we're gonna have all the models. And if you want to run Model X, it will be on this platform. And then to like what we were just talking about, you can assemble the tools to make that work any way you would like. But we're going to have all the models here. Yeah. I think we're really starting to see it play out now, right?
Totally. I mean, it's like, what's the value prop of AWS? They make deploying whatever you want easier, and you don't have to manage it, right? So, makes sense. These
Or
are
you
going to
get to
be the critical
choose the
things.
level of management that you want to endure.
What are you willing to suffer or work to get your system running, I guess?
If you want to be behind the curtain pulling all the levers and stuff, you could still do that, but you've got these other options here that let us do that for you, right? So, typical AWS. All right. So that's all the AWS news that I had sort of scraped for the week. Did you have
Ooh.
anything that I had missed?
I have two things that are kind of quality of life things.
Okay.
So there's a KMS news item. KMS now tracks the last usage of all KMS keys. So that's useful if you're doing audits or checking if you're running into permission issues, debugging, that kind of thing. And the other thing that I saw was that you can now invalidate CloudFront caches or by cache tag. So you
By
can
cache
invalidate
tag.
CloudFront by tag, which
Oh.
is interesting. So you don't necessarily have to invalidate the entire cache,
Okay.
which is cool.
Yeah, very
It's 'cause
cool.
that could take forever to do,
Oh,
right?
yeah,
Like,
depending on how much data is in there, I can take a long time.
yeah,
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
that's
the biggest
cool.
pain point of CloudFront, so
Yeah. On
in
the
my opinion.
KMS front, I have a follow-up question. When you say you can
Oh.
track the usage, does it show you where those like which services are using that key? Or is it just telling you that the key is in use somewhere?
It shows you the CloudTrail event ID, the
Okay.
operation type, and the timestamp.
Okay.
So basically, I guess it's more for picking up keys that are just sitting unused.
Yeah. I guess ultimately
I don't.
that would solve my problem because like often I'll be like, cleaning something up and there's a key in here and you're kind of like, well, is somebody using this key? Like I don't know, right?
What is
Like
this for? Is this
yeah,
orphaned?
and
Yeah.
you don't want to delete it because then everything goes bye-bye, right?
Yeah.
So, you can mark it as disabled, but then depending on where it's used or whatever. So it'd be interesting. I'll have to look at that one because I bet you I've left more than one key lying around because I wasn't 100% sure if it was still in use or not.
Totally. I mean, the cost of deleting a key that's in active use versus the cost of just leaving it there. There's
Yeah.
some asymmetry there, you know?
Yeah, I'm not willing to accept the risk for it. Like, what is it? $1 per month per key plus API calls. So,
Something like that. Yeah.
like for a buck, it's like an Amazon tax. I'll just give you this dollar because I'm too afraid to delete this thing because I'm not 100% sure if it's used anywhere.
Yeah, but now if you see a key that's like it hasn't been touched in a year or whatever, I think you can
Yeah.
be
On the
relatively safe.
367th day after you delete it, 2 days later, somebody's like, I can't get in my stuff. What happened? I'd probably
Just
still
make sure
leave it.
that's not. Yeah, probably. Just make
Yeah.
sure that's not for like deep archive Glacier
Oh my
backups or
God.
something, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah, exactly, right? I do like I was just talking to somebody the other day. They're like, well, we could probably clean these images out of the ECR because nobody's using them. And I'm like, yeah, I don't disagree with you, but probably what's going to happen is we're going to clean those images up and nuke the registry, and somebody will be like, hey, I
Yeah.
can't get my image, like a day later. And you're like, crap. So you know what we did?
Always.
We put a policy on it that basically just said deny all. And we're just
Oh,
waiting for
okay.
somebody to holler at us. So
Yeah.
we're like, okay, we'll give it another 60 days. And if nobody
Okay.
hollers at us, we're probably okay to delete it. So yeah, so far it's been quiet. For about a week.
Okay.
So maybe nobody is
That's a
using
good
that app.
sign.
I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Okay, so if we're done with AWS, my favorite segment, personal news. Any
Oh
project
yes.
updates?
So I remember we talked about last week about I was taking a bit of a break. That ended immediately after the
I love
podcast. And
it.
I went right
Nice.
back into it and I told myself, okay, you're gonna ship a game in a week. You're gonna try and ship a game in a week. I didn't ship anything. But
Thought
I
you were gonna
did
make money.
use
You were gonna make me spend my money on Steam.
No, it's there's nothing live anywhere, but I did get really far in developing like a card game prototype,
No
pretty
way.
much. Yeah.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah. Yeah. So I did it totally in Codex, working with Rust and like a small game engine library.
Yeah.
I have to dig up the name again. But essentially what I was doing it so there's like a couple things that I've found that it's really good for and a couple things I found that it's not quite so good for.
Okay.
In the experience. So I mocked up the basic rule set, and was able to render like two sides of the board and like a central shared game zone, right? And the cards can you can render the cards and whatnot. So what I found it's really good for is like rapidly iterating on a rule set. So if you have like initial set of starting rules and you implement those as different classes, different card types, that kind of thing, it's really good at quickly iterating and tweaking numbers there, right? And also it's really good at I've set it up so that I can run simulations of games of like playing CPU versus CPU, right? So I can run like 100,000 sims and see the rates at which certain cards have been played, what's the win rate, that kind of thing. So it's
Oh,
great
very
for
cool.
setting up that kind of thing and prototyping really fast. what it's bad for is design. Like if you want to do if you want like a model to handle the design of a game for you, there's a lot of work to be done there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really cool. That's really cool. Speaking of games, I'm going to give a plug to a buddy of mine. He released a game on Steam. I think we might have talked about this. It's called Vesper Core.
Vesper Core.
Okay. Yeah, and it's kind of like I would describe it as like a tower defense style, in the sense that mobs come at you and you're defending a central, he calls it the core, the Vesper core in the game. So you're defending that against mobs. I suck at those kind of games, and I still suck at those kind of games, but I've mentioned a couple times the podcast to him. I'm going to keep bugging him because I don't know how much of it's Gen AI, maybe none of it is, but I still want him to come and talk about it, because to be able to go through all of that and get it published on the platform and have people buying and playing that game, I think that's really cool. So
that's really cool. Yeah.
Really neat, man. I expect weekly updates on the card game then on the podcast, and we'll, then when you release it, we'll play it. That's cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Now I don't want to talk about my updates because it's just Kanban board stuff, and it's boring compared to that.
Another kind of card game, if you think about it.
A much less fun card game. But you know what? I don't know if we talked about this during the episode or not. Maybe we did. And I was just kind of like, it's just a Kanban board, right? Like I'm dragging cards around, I'm doing updates. Like, what else could I have AI help me with? So the first thing I built, probably that night after the podcast, because I was all jazzed up after the podcast, was my first thing was, I don't want to always decide what it is that I should be working on, because there's a lot of cards, and I don't know about you, but I can get easily distracted, and I have a hard time sometimes prioritizing stuff, right? Like, should I work on this card or that card? Or just depend on the customer or whatever. So I went through a whole planning session, and with Claude, and I think it's okay. It fell down this week, and I'll tell you why it fell down. But what it is it's like a little, on the Kanban dashboard, it's just a widget that says what's next. And it looks through the cards that are open and I think not blocked, if I remember, because I'm usually blocking a card because I'm waiting on somebody, right? I'm waiting on you to give me something. So I'm not going to work on that until I move it back out of blocked. So it came up with a scoring algorithm, essentially. And it's like, I'll look at this, and explained it to me. I was like, okay, that's pretty good. And it worked really well for a couple days. But I found, I'm going to use that term again, the Achilles heel. I also track personal cards in my Kanban. And it is, I want to schedule a barbecue with a couple friends. And I'm like, I did that. I sent them a text. And it's just like, no, you should work on this. And I'm like, I don't
work on the barbecue.
I really do want to fire the smoker up, but I can't work on this every day, all day. So I found a little bit of a problem there. I have to figure out what the heck is going on there. So that was pretty cool. Pretty happy with it. I think it'll be a neat little feature, and it'll just remove me having to think about stuff when I'm maybe paralyzed as being overly dramatic, but when I'm having a hard time just, hey, I've got 30-minute window or a 45-minute window. Yeah. I just need you to help me figure out what you believe the next most important thing is that we work on. So it's pretty good. It's working. Okay. The other thing that I think is go ahead.
I was gonna say, I like the priorities. I think it's actually correct on the priorities. you should be focusing on the barbecue.
I don't disagree. I don't know if my customers would be so happy about that. Unless they were
probably not, no.
Unless they were local and funded. They could come over and have some barbecue with me. That would probably win them over as well. So that's pretty cool. I think we've got to iterate on a little bit, and we'll sort it out. The thing that I'm most excited about though is I have an ECS cluster running now with Fargate and a image that for now runs Claude. And I'm able to tag cards as agent ready. And for now, what it does is it picks those up, and I've only tested it with on actually the Kanban project, and I've only really asked it to update documentation so far. But what I'm able to do is go into Kanban, create a new card that says something like, "Hey, we've shipped 3 new features. Here are the merge records, right? I want you to review the merge records, compare that against the current documentation, and update that documentation so it reflects the new features, right?" That's kind of the first card that we made. And all you do is it's got a little radio box and you click it. And that's essentially the way we called it is agent ready. And what happens is behind the scenes, there's an API call that's made that queues that up in a queue, and a container comes to life and Claude picks it up, and it's got the information that it needs in Secrets Manager to then connect back to GitLab, and it friggin' creates merge requests for documentation and pushes them themselves. Sweet. Right? So I'm like, oh, this is cool. And it works. So now the next thing I'm thinking is a lot of times a customer will just ask me for something like, can we do X on Y? And I'm like, well, probably, but I don't know off the top of my head. So what I'm thinking is now a research agent.
Research task. Yeah. Makes sense.
So not to give them that info back, but hey, go, this is the question, go research it and update the card with your findings, including sources. So then I can go and read it and see how it applies to the particular customer. So I think that's probably what I'll do next with it, but yeah, made some progress. I would think both of them are still a little sketchy. Would I let it do anything more than documentation? I don't think so. But progress
with infrastructure or anything, right? No, that's good. So it, like all you really need to get away from that issue is you just need a separate board for your personal stuff, basically.
Yeah.
And don't give it access to that, or give it, or make sure you specify, hey, we don't want to work on this during this time.
Yeah.
And maybe something like a pick 3 or something, like show me the top 3 things I could work on, and then you just pick one and go.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking even simpler than that, because it's got a little scoring algorithm, it put it in the docs. I'm like, okay, if it's in the personal workspace, it's -100.
Huge penalty. Yeah.
Yeah. Like big penalties for this. The only possible way that will ever surface to what's next is in theory, if I had no other customer cards. Right.
I mean, you could gate that by work hours too, if you wanted. I could.
Although I don't really want to encourage myself to look at the Kanban board after 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
I have to.
That's fair.
So anyways, regardless, I'm having a lot of fun/learning opportunities screwing around with a Kanban board of all bloody things.
It's so fun.
Right?
I don't know. Like just to mess around, and there's so much to learn and pick up and just be curious about with this kind of tech. So
yeah.
I'm also having a blast just messing around, honestly.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that I couldn't convince Claude that I thought we should do is it was very adamant, and I let it win because I wasn't, to be honest, quite sure on how to approach this part, was do we build an ECS cluster with a container and we have to manage that image, although Claude is managing that image for me, right, and building it, or do we use Bedrock and it's more of a managed platform that I could then fire up the agents over there and let them run. And I can't remember why it convinced me, but I was like, okay, let's just try it and see what happens. I don't know. What do you think?
In my opinion, that's like a billing question, right? Like you have a subscription. If you want to use that subscription, you have to use the Claude CLI in that container, right?
Yeah.
But you can use Bedrock if you want.
Yeah.
To connect it that way. The thing with managing the image, I guess, as long as you're committing it to ECR, it's not that big a deal, right?
The other thing that I wanted, and I haven't had time to figure it out, is, you know, what sparked all this conversation, if you remember, was the article, I think it was from Cloudflare. Remember they were talking about how all their developers are using that sort of internally baked system, and they talked about like a, I think they called it a gateway, something like that, a gateway, right? So I was kind of thinking, like, I wonder if I could have Because do I need the most expensive Frontier model to do documentation? Probably not. So I need to do some more reading. And, you know, your brain kind of thinks about this stuff. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I want Claude in certain situations, but why couldn't I use, you know, was it GLM? We were talking about that a little while ago, right?
A GLM, a QMEK, yeah.
Whatever models, you know, I don't know if it would be Open Code or something like that as the gateway. I got to figure that out. I just kind of thought that it would almost be interesting to have an orchestrator that basically says, here's the task. You decide on what you think is the best model to use, because we don't probably need Opus 4.7 for X. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need that state-of-the-art model for that.
Yeah, build your own smart router, right? Like, yeah. I mean, you pay a bit in tokens up front, but you can have something else classify that, really. Yeah. Or you can have a list of, you can do it by task type, right? So if you're updating docs, that could maybe be like a Sonnet tier model can go do that. Or if you're writing, if it's actually like a code fix, you probably want like an Opus or, I guess it depends on the fix too, right? Like the magnitude of the change.
Yeah.
But you could scale it for sure.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking it'd be kind of another interesting iteration on this to figure out how sort of that router would work and stuff. I've spent $1.37 so far on Claude API for my big documentation thing since last week.
Okay.
I would say it's like anywhere 20 to 30 cents per task that's gone through it.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you think about it in terms of like developer time to go and write that documentation, right?
Yeah.
It's probably worthwhile.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I think we should just turn this podcast into the personal Gen AI podcast. The
personal projects is way more interesting.
Way more interesting, right? Let's just change this to the personal software podcast where we just talk about what it is we're building. Just fun. I think probably I'll end up tonight working on the research card and see if I can figure out how that works. Yeah. Okay, so where do we go next? Let's change gears and talk a little bit about some Gen AI news. I put the biggest thing is GPT-5.5, right? Announced earlier this week. What date is it?
Earlier this week.
Six days ago, 23rd?
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that jumped out at me, it was all different pricing models and stuff like that, was, and I know you'll like this, the benchmarks.
Yes.
Holy, they really jumped compared to Opus.
It's better. It's benching better than Opus on most things at the moment.
Yeah. Do you have access to the latest one, 5.5 yet? Or?
Yep.
Yeah. 5.5 have you tried it?
I have. So what I'm doing now is I have one panel with Codex running with 5.5, and I have one panel with Claude running with 4.7. For various things, right? Just to see see what the difference is.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. There's definitely a little bit of a step change increase with the Codex model in terms of like raw capability. But the behavior is very different from Claude.
Okay.
In like a very interesting way. It's like Claude is like, I have this vibe. I'm going to tell you these things that I want you to go do. There's kind of like a word soup. You send it and it'll go and figure out what to do with that soup.
Yeah.
Codex is like super literal when you're writing code, and you really want to use it. You want to be judicial with the level that you're using it at.
Okay.
Like be particular with the strength level. So I've been using it on low and medium, and it's really good at being fast and doing solid, just like little code chunks. If you put it on extra high, it'll think forever. It'll be the most capable thing, but it can get really stuck in some bad patterns.
Oh, so really?
That's what I've noticed in it. Yeah. Like it'll get stuck in a loop and you won't be able to get out.
Okay.
And you'll have to exit and start a new chat. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I haven't tried it yet. Poor old ChatGPT or GPT, whatever you want to call it. It always just falls to the thing I'll do later. It is interesting, not related to this topic though. I've been going back to Kiro a little more.
Oh yeah.
Not for coding, but for specific AWS questions. I do find sometimes when I ask Claude, kind of like what you just said, it's awfully wordy. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure this is good, but I don't want to read, four page screens worth of stuff to tell me what is the new security policy, default security policy for a new load balancer if I deploy it. You know, like, don't give me the theory of the universe. I just need that. It should be one line. And I've found that Kiro will answer AWS specific questions very concisely. And it's just like, this is what you need. And here's the reference that I use to answer that. And then I'll go do reading. So I have been doing a little bit more of that this week. I used to use Kiro quite heavily for AWS stuff. And I don't know what the shift was this week. I think very similar to kind of you. I wonder how this would do. Like, I've been so Camp Claude for so long now. I was just like, I wonder. Those very tactical questions, it's done a really good job. Just give me the answer and let me move on to something else. Right.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, they probably tuned the harness to be specifically for AWS use cases, right? That makes sense to me.
Maybe. Although, right, it's only using probably a Sonnet model, right? And I make my Claude code a little less verbose by changing the model, because it's going to default to 4.7, I think, at this point, right? Chew through all those tokens.
Yeah. I wonder if they have a fine-tuned version for AWS use cases. That'd be kind of cool, but just speculation.
It would make sense, right? What else is here on the 5.5 thing? Well, I guess the other thing that was kind of interesting is, and we've seen this a couple times now with AWS, right? New model on Bedrock. Yep. Unless I misread this, I think 5.5 is already available in limited preview in that new feature that we talked about earlier on Bedrock.
I'm
pretty sure it's 5.5, right? So, yeah, I guess that's what you get when you pay hundreds of millions of dollars for compute contracts and stuff like that.
Billions.
You get on Bedrock the fastest.
Well, it's probably part of the deal. Like, you have to be on Bedrock if you want to use our compute, probably, right?
Yeah,
we have to be able to. It's got to be part of the contract.
Yeah.
I saw a thing. The total. This is just unrelated, but just related to data center spend this year, right? Is projected to be $600 billion for data center build out in the U.S. So.
Did you see this article? There's a new data center project that I think just got approved in Utah. And I don't remember how much power it's going to use, but the data center will use more power than the entire state of Utah.
that's absurd.
Right?
That's insane.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. I can tell you that's a lot of power.
Yeah.
The load apparently is like not stable either. So it's like really variable power. So it's really hard to service these data centers if you're a utility. Yeah. Like it's like down to 30% up to 100% within like minutes, apparently, the load swings. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It just depends on the number of Claude queries that are going through. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. I'm telling you, man, we need Keanu. He needs to come and figure out that that power situation in Chicago for us. Get it sorted.
Get us.
If anybody can do it, he can. Yeah, he can. Okay, so the other thing, we talked last week about anecdotally how a couple people that I hang around with were like, Claude got really dumb. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And they actually did a pretty good postmortem. Like, and I thought it was pretty honest. And they basically... admit isn't the right word, but they had made some mistakes that basically did make it a little dumb that hit Claude Code, the SDK, as well as CoWork. So it was everything.
Yeah.
The API calls, if you're making direct API calls, were okay. But essentially what happened was they changed the effort level in order to help manage demand. And when they did that, it sort of messed it up a little bit. And it was like that for quite some time, actually, nearly a month.
Yeah.
And before they sort of fixed it.
a month of degraded performance, rather.
Yeah. But it's funny because, like, you know, I noticed it while we were talking about it, right? I noticed it. Last week, but up until that point, I had seen people complaining about it in a couple Discord channels, but I hadn't experienced it myself. And then all of a sudden I was like, what's just happened here? And I almost like, is this the placebo effect? It's always been this dumb, but I just now think it's dumb because somebody else said it was. I don't know. But yeah, you know, a couple interesting sort of outcomes. They're like, hey, we missed this internal testing. So in the future, we will sort of eat our own dog food kind of idea, do different evaluations and stuff like that to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I think the internal Anthropic team doesn't use the latest version of Claude Code too. I've heard that said.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's speculation or what, but I wouldn't surprise me if they missed this kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting change. It's just like we changed the default reasoning level. You got to wonder why. I guess it's just the compute crunch for them.
Pure speculation, but I would bet you that's what it is, right? It's just like
there's
so much demand. We can't serve every request on X high or whatever they call it now, right? So we'll just default to this, and it didn't work out the way they maybe had thought it was going to do that or do it.
So, yeah. I've also heard speculation that it's related to like the move to GCP or AWS, right? Because those chips, their bespoke AI chips, have more integrated memory, so that lets you have like a bigger context window easier than on like the NVIDIA chips.
Mm-hmm.
And the NVIDIA chips are the best ones to use for research, obviously, but also for inference. So I wonder if there's something there.
Yeah, maybe. Which is a great, pure speculation, which is a great segue into the next thing. You shared a video from YouTube. Matt Pocock, I think. Software fundamentals matter more than ever. I watched this whole thing and you made me think, well, you didn't make me think of it. It was next on the list, but it was a good segue on the context and his thought about, after you get above a certain number of tokens, it just gets dumber and dumber and dumber. And the
context rot.
The importance of compacting that context would be kind of one of the things that I took away from that video. I know there's obviously a lot more in there. It was about an hour and a half, a lot more in there. But that's one thing that stuck with me because I think sometimes my context windows get a little large, especially because a lot of times now I'm always telling it, hey, go check OpenBrain, right? Like go find stuff about this. And that's all getting loaded into the context. So I'm sort of pre-populating maybe the context with maybe too much information. So I probably need to find a bit of a balance. Although I don't believe I'm running into the it getting dumber as the context gets larger. I don't know if I'm jamming that much into it, but any other thoughts on this one?
This was a really good talk, if you have the chance to go see it. But he has lots of great points about how the fundamentals of good development, like good software engineering, matter more than ever. And I took a lot of notes away from this talk. Like, for example, so there's a lot of people who are going into like the spec-driven development kind of mindset, right? That's one of the things that kind of came out of the agentic coding situation. Mm-hmm. Like you've messed around with that a bit as well, right?
Yeah.
But like essentially the main thesis is code's not cheap, actually. And I kind of vibe with this. It's like a liability, right? Like you're putting code out there, you have to depend on it and maintain in the future if you're going to use it. But like the main thesis was bad code will slow your AI systems down. And if you have a poorly architected code base, you're losing a lot of the benefits of using these AI agents just because they have to go and search so many more files and folders to get the right context to do the job that you need them to do. So like actually a good code base for AI agents looks like a couple of big deep modules that you can test really well, and then you can have the agent go and implement any changes, but you know exactly where the code should go, right? So I thought that was really interesting interesting and useful way to think about designing with agents.
Yeah.
For code.
I think I need to go back and watch it again. I think to your point, like there's lots of really good little nuggets of information there, but I think what you at least for me, what I need to do is sort of work on some of that stuff in real time. Like, okay,
yeah,
in order to, for the concept to stay in my head, right? Like, okay, he says you should do it like this. Well, let's go try it, right? And see how it works and, yeah, and how would I use that in my workflow. I'm also interested in some of the skills that he had talked about, like the grill me skill.
Grill me skill, yeah.
I went and looked for that today, actually, because I didn't get a chance to try it. I ran out of time, but I did grab it and it looks a little different than what he mentioned in the training session. I don't know if maybe there's a couple different versions of the grill me skill or something like that, but maybe. I just like that idea because I often wonder, I think Claude's pretty good at, like, if you tell it, hey, don't just agree with me, like, we're going to talk about this and we're going to hash it out until we come to an agreement.
Yeah.
If you do that, it's generally pretty good, but I want to see if I use that grill me skill, like, how many questions would I get on, as an example, like the Kanban thing. I want to refactor some code that I have. Okay, so, you know, grill me on what I want to do over here. I think it's well worth a test just to see what it can do. So yeah, you're right. Like, really good video. I watched another video of his after that. It had a lot of the same themes, but he's got a lot of really great content. I think it's worth a watch.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, it makes a lot of sense, right? Like, the idea is, if you, it's like we talked about with agentic loops in general, right? Like, if you have a tight feedback loop, which is what, for all it's testing, it's LSPs, it's that kind of thing, right? Then you can work really fast and get good results out of it. But if your code base isn't set up so that you can test and check LSPs really easily, then you're not going to have the best time. You won't be able to move as fast. But the caveat to that is, it's really hard to figure out what is a good test. Like, how do you decide what to measure, what the output should be, that kind of thing. And I guess that's where this kind of questioning method can help you out.
Yeah.
Is the idea.
Yeah. Thinking about the Discord channel that I hang around in, like, there's a couple people in there who are like, I asked tool X to make tests and all these tests are garbage. Right. And we've talked about that before, how, like, the systems are smart enough to basically just fake it out. And if you're not looking, you think you got all these tests and you go on your merry way. The other thing that I wrote down from that, YouTube video is, it made me smile, like, how many old books he's like, this is a great book, you should read it, this is a great book, you should, and these are all old books, like, you know, system
Pragmatic
design,
Programmer was mentioned, I think,
System Design 101, basically, like, these things are still relevant even though you have access to very powerful tools to help you move faster. To your point, you still need to understand the fundamentals. And you know, he mentioned a couple times, right? Test-driven development. You still probably want to write your tests before you write your code. And work towards getting those tests to pass, knowing full well the first time you run your code, it will fail because you're not satisfying those tests, and kind of working backwards from there. I know there's a lot of really good info in here.
A lot to think about. Like, how do you structure the system so that you can narrow down the focus on the tests that actually matter for what you want, right? You almost need, like, a spec for your testing.
Yeah, right?
Crazy.
But I did like, you mentioned it earlier on, like, I don't think he's against, my take was that he wasn't against spec-driven development, but my take was that his concern was that in some cases, spec-driven development could lead to dumber outcomes because you're just basically context stuffing. You're giving it so much information that it goes past what he believes is the threshold. Even though you can have a million tokens in context, you know, it starts getting a little dumber after X. I don't know if I'm misinterpreting what he said there, but that was kind of the thing that I took from that.
Yeah, like, you want to break it down into, like, a massive PRD is fine, that's a good spec, but you need to chunk that down into small actionable steps that you can test, and that's how you actually build something usable, I guess.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I think Kiro did really well. Like, I haven't tried Kiro, the IDE, the spec-driven development IDE, in a long time, but I remember when I was first trying it out, it would write quite a lot about what it is you're trying to accomplish, but then break it down into, like, I'd scroll the task list it would create for itself, and there were tons of tasks, right? Like, that's where the Kanban board first came from, was Kiro built those first specs and the first set of tests, right? And it, I think it did a really good job. Did I audit every test? No. So maybe, to his point, and we've talked about, maybe it is worth another look to see, is it actually testing things that matter? But I thought it did a really good job at taking a large sort of PRD and breaking it down into really small little digestible tasks to work on.
Yeah. And if the module you're working on does what you need it to do, right, and the general test pass on that, then it's like, okay, the change is probably good, right? You don't have to you don't have to dig into it too much more.
You know, my favorite word right now after watching that video is concise.
Right? Yeah.
Like I use it all the time now with Claude, because I noticed myself, like, generally my workflow now is, hey, this needs to be fixed. Don't fix it. Mm. Create an issue for it. Right. We're going to work off issues. That's kind of my version of spec driven development. Everything's in GitLab. So what I noticed was it can write crazy issues. Like they go on and on and on. And I'm just like, dude,
this is not necessary.
This is not necessary. This is too much. Like, I appreciate the effort, but oh my God. So now I'm like, you know, don't fix this. Write a concise issue that would allow any agent to pick this work up later on. And that one word I have noticed would take an issue from like this to like this, right? So it's helped a little bit, but I think I could probably be a little more forceful with it on trying to reduce those specs that it's creating in some cases.
Gonna put it in my dot Claude MD.
Be concise in uppercase.
Underlined.
Yeah, exactly. Walk me through the DeepMind Vision Banana.
Okay. So this was a really cool research paper released by DeepMind, obviously. And so this was the Vision Banana. So essentially what they've done is they've taken Nano Banana, they've tuned an image generator to the point where it can beat SAM 3 on segmentation and depth analysis and metric depth estimation. So what does that mean? You can feed this thing an image and then it'll spit out a point cloud essentially of like the depth of objects in that image. So kind of what we, crazy stuff is kind of what we talked about with, I guess a year or two ago, but like, we're going to end up at a point where these vision models are going to be kind of like a preprocessor unit for like computer vision systems, probably. Right. Like, you're just going to feed video frames into this thing and then build like a map of where a robot is or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah. This one went right over my head. Like, I started reading it and I'm like, oh dude, there's too many decimals and numbers in here. I need a concise summary from Claude on what the hell this is, because it's my brain didn't compute it. So there's a couple things in there, like just some of the, I don't know, like, do you want to talk about some of the metric numbers? Like, I don't know what those metrics mean. Like, how does that relate to what we currently have versus what this thing can do now? Do you know?
So like, basically the result was, it was about like plus or minus 5 or 6% of like actual depth estimates on the results, which is, I don't know about you, but I don't know if I can get within 5 or 6% of a depth estimate from a photo.
I don't think I could. Right. So interesting stuff. And I think, to your point, like, my takeaway from this is the amount of research that is happening that, and we've said this before, just these are the dumbest tools or models you will ever use. And you know, you said earlier, as we started this, it's just like the acceleration we've seen. Like, it seems every time we talk, there's like, look at this new thing, look at this new thing. And it's just getting faster and faster and faster.
It kind of makes me wonder. So you know how you can do like time series prediction, right? So let's say you have a still of a scene and you have like a ball, like a basketball shot, for example, and you have someone, shoot it to the net. Could you, show it 2 points in this or 2 frames of the scene and then have it project out based on like generate the in-between frames, for example, of like what this is going to look like in like 10 seconds or 20 seconds or whatever. Like, can you have a system that imagines what can happen, essentially? Like,
Yeah, based on an
that's
image.
crazy to think about. Yeah.
Wow.
Like
Yeah,
that's where
that is
that's
crazy.
I mean, it probably a little expensive to do that, right?
Yeah,
But
yeah, yeah. Well, I guess some we're gonna have to find power from somewhere.
we're gonna have to set up a lot, a
Lot.
lot of solar, a lot
Yeah.
of solar.
Yeah, the whole planet is just one just giant solar panel. Let's end on a really fun article again about somebody blowing up their production environment.
Oh boy, it's the third one so far.
I think it's the
Many
third
more to come,
one.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think in the end, the summary of this, and I'm not trying to make light of this in any way, right? Is backups shouldn't exist on the same resources where your production sits. Probably not a good place for your backups. And just like even if your agent has very specific instructions not to do something, it doesn't mean that it's not going to do it. So guardrails, guardrails, guardrails.
Yeah, so what happened here, this was a railway deployment, right? Which I don't know if you're familiar with
I know a
railway.
little bit about it. Walk us through
Okay.
it. What do you know about it?
So railway is essentially like a very developer-friendly hosting service for your cloud applications, right? So for your web apps or whatnot, what have you. But they have an API, CLI, all the usual stuff that you would want for like a serverless app that you want to deploy, or Serverful, I think they have anyways. But essentially what happened was this company had in their, again, in their .cloud MD or whatnot, do not guess about anything. Make no guesses, always verify. But of course, upon interrogation, Claude said, I guessed, I verified, right? Oops, you're totally right. I shouldn't have
Yeah,
done that.
shouldn't have done that.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you that the tools can still hallucinate. I think what it did is it just ended up nuking their whole deployment,
Yeah,
essentially.
pretty
Just
much.
they had to
Yeah.
roll back.
Roll back, yeah. And all their
But
backups and everything. So
all
very
their backups.
similar to the story that we talked about probably 3, 4 weeks ago, right? Like
Pretty
the
much, yeah.
entire production environment and all of your backups gone.
Yeah, I think what's nice about this is Railway updated their API such that you can't just nuke the entire thing on one go now.
Yeah.
So that's a good fix. But it was a supported API, part of the supported API contract, right? What happened for this company. So,
I still think like, blast radius is important thing to think about, separating your environments into like speaking of AWS, like into different accounts. Termination protection is your friend.
Totally.
If you want to give an
Object
agent,
lock.
object lock. If you want to give an agent access to something, make sure that it only has read access. And to the same point that they made in this article is just because you tell it never to assume an admin role, if it can figure out how to assume that admin role, you have to assume that it will do that. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah, you got to be really careful. You got to be really careful.
Yeah, and there's almost room for like a guide or something for cloud engineers out there, right? Like, what do you want? What's the access level you want to give to this kind of thing, right? Because you got to be real careful because, if you're on AWS specifically, but I'm sure this is true for the other providers, you'll have CLI profiles for your accounts, right? If you're on this the if you're on your default user terminal, you have access to all of your profiles, right? Regardless of whether you have a read-only or a write profile or not, right? So,
What I, you know,
plenty
one
of
of the
foot
things,
guns.
I like that. One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is like I use OnePass for everything. And I was kind of thinking like to get away from the local profiles, right? Like, is there a way that I could store that stuff there and give it programmatic access to my vault to go and get the credentials that it needs when it needs it. But then you could see again how that could potentially be problematic, because what if it accesses a different vault? I just, you know, it's the same thing we've talked about over and over, is, you know, you need checks for the checks for the checks. Yeah, it's just, I think it's just a risk that we all have to be aware of and try to protect yourself as best as you can.
Yeah, especially when the model is willing to go to any length to do the task, right? Yeah, like with Mythos, for example, they saw that in the testing, right? Yeah. Like it'll circumvent anything it can to do what it expects that you want it to do. So, you know, maybe consider SSO. It would be one way to guard against that.
Yeah, that's what I do right now, is I have SSO. It's not perfect though, right? So you can see how it could easily try to step around that stuff if it really was determined to try to fix something. The other thing that I thought of when I was reading this was the conversation we had with Dr. David Bauer there about a month ago, maybe longer. And you know how he said, you know, they're thinking about how do you put LLMs inside your MCPs? And just again, that idea of having a check, right? And it's still an LLM, so you have to kind of think, is it going to be able to do what you want? But sort of that second set of eyes almost that says, oh, you want to get this information? Are you allowed to do that? Does that make, you know, sense? Is it safe? Having something check that? I don't know if that's the right solution or not, but it did make me kind of, that conversation we had with him there about a month ago pop back in my head and think of, well, I wonder if that's a possibility. I don't know.
Totally. Well, I mean, you could use like a BERT to classify, like, here's the policy, right? Does this request violate the policy in some way? Yeah. That would be one good way to check. Just like a smaller language model, like you said, like that Mamba model, for example, you could probably do it with.
Yeah.
Or even just like regexes or sandboxes, right?
Yeah.
Like, at least do it. But.
Yeah. Lots of the above. probably all of the above, or depending on the level of importance of that environment.
Yeah. You exactly. Know,
multiple protections are good in highly critical environments, which when you think about it, really isn't any different than the way it's always been, or the way it really always should be in those environments where if something goes wrong, people are going to be upset about it. So you want to be very careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, that's everything that I had. Did you have anything on your list that I didn't go through on my side?
No, I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay. Look at that. Let's wrap up with, this is still a ways out. It's April 29th. June 3rd is the AWS summit in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'm hoping lots of people go. It'll be fun. It usually is a good day's event. Lots of people to talk to, lots of cool stuff. So that came across my inbox this week, or must have been this week. So I thought, I better mention that. So hopefully you planning on going?
I wasn't, but I'm thinking about it now.
I think you should. Yeah, you should. Okay. It'll be fun, right? So I'm hoping I'll keep reminding everybody, because it'd be good to, you know, see a bunch of people there.
Yeah, I forgot to go last year and I regretted it. So
yeah, I enjoy it. I put so many steps on in a day. I literally just do laps in the vendor
in the hall,
in the hall, just doing laps, talking to people and stuff. So it's a fun day. Okay. Yeah. Let's wrap up with recommendations. Do you want to go first?
Sure. So in terms of what to watch, we just started watching the latest season of The Boys. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Superhero stuff. Gory as usual.
Yep.
And then I've been reading, or I picked up again, a book called Code by Charles Petzold. I don't know if you heard about that one.
I have not.
But essentially he walks through the entire history of encoding into computing, into computers and technology and programming. So it's a really interesting read. So that's cool. Been awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I picked up Vibe Coding again. I got distracted with Red Rising and I finished Red Rising.
Nice.
Which I think it's been on my recommendations for like 3 weeks now. That book is awesome. It's so good. So I finished that. I did buy the next book, but I'm like, don't even start this book because you were halfway through vibe coding, right? And I got distracted with, you know, planetary sci-fi. So I was like, intrigue, okay, I'm going to go back to that. Drama. So yeah, intrigue is a good word. So I've gone back to vibe coding. I'm probably about three quarters of the way through that. That is a really great book. And I think you mentioned, I'm not sure if you mentioned during a podcast or just while we were chatting, you know, the chef analogy that they use throughout it. You know, the chef versus the sous chef versus the cooks and stuff and the systems that are built around a well-functioning kitchen. I think those are really great analogies to kind of take and think how you want to work with these new agents and stuff. So, that's been really good. There's a new season of From coming out. I don't know if you've heard of this. From is like, you wake up in a little town, you have no idea how you got there, and I'll just say you don't want to be outside at night.
Okay.
Bad things will happen to you if you're outside at night. So it's really good. I think it's season 4. So, I'm less concerned about it. I'll kind of like watch the recap, you know, that'll happen on season 4, episode 1 of the previous 3 seasons. My wife is churning through all 3 seasons to try to remember everything that happened. And I'm like, oh, you'll give me the Coles notes. So that's awesome. I'm not sure if it's started already or if it's coming soon. So if you're into that kind of stuff,
totally.
It's pretty right cool. Up my alley. Pretty cool little thing. And then I have one more recommendation. I've been watching The Substitute. The old movie.
The Substitute.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
It's true cinema that they progressively get worse and worse and worse. I think there's 4 substitutes. Like, come on. How many times can you make this movie, right? The first one has I can totally see him, but I can't remember his name. He was
Tom Berenger.
Berenger, you got it right.
Okay,
it wasn't.
Look at the Wikipedia.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Like, but then it's just like Treat Williams, I think, is in the second one, which is the best name ever, and it just progressively gets worse and worse. But I'm like making myself watch them. They're so bad.
Three direct-to-DVD sequels. The Substitute 2, School's Out.
Yeah.
The Substitute 3, Winner Takes All. And The Substitute, Failure Is Not an Option.
Yes. That's so awesome. Good. So good. And you know what? You know who else is in number 2? BD Wong.
Who's that? Oh my God.
Okay. I was like watching it and I'm like, that's BD Wong. So which immediately reminded us that he did a TV show. I think it was only 18 episodes, but it was called Something Is Killing Me. So, and I remember watching it. It was like a medical mystery thing. So now we're on a mission to find it again and watch those 18 episodes. BD Wong content as well. There you go. Who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah. Who knew? You came here to learn about AWS and Gen AI, and you're finding out about movies with BD Wong and Treat Williams, I think is the name.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Classic stuff, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's all I got. So I guess we're done. And you know, I'm sitting here thinking about the outro music and I realized that I made a horrible, horrible mistake. I only updated the intro music with the new song. Mm. So that means tonight we're ending the show with the intro music rather than the outro music because it's that good.
Awesome.
All right. See everybody next week. As always, it's been fun.
So I built this MCP.